Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. This is Divya Parekh, your today's show's host. I am extremely excited to have Jim on our show. Jim is a great Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, okay. For some reason, it was going in and out. So thank you, Jim, for joining us. And I would like to share with you a little bit about Jim. Jim Howard is a great person. He's a great coach. He's a great leader. So a little story I would like to share is that I had gone for a speaking conference to L.A. And in L.A., as I'm returning back on the flight and during the conference, I came across these two wonderful people, Jim and his wife, Chris, and they lived in North Carolina as well. So gosh, lo and behold, I was meeting people who were my townmates and my town people, my same North Carolina state people. And here I was so extremely excited to meet people from North Carolina because everybody I would see in the conference was from LA. And we traveled back together, and I had the pleasure to spend the time with both of these phenomenal people. And when I talked with Jim, he talked about his coaching, his philosophy, and his principles, and it really touched me. And what I wanted to bring was his philosophy and his thinking to all the parents, to the students, and to the coaches, that how we can change our children's lives, how we can create the next generation leaders with the gems of pearls that Jim has to share. So Jim is a great leader. He's a great coach. He's a great speaker. So Jim, I'm going to invite you to share a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Divya. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to always talk about something that I'm passionate about, which is helping young people understand the importance of leadership, the importance of good, solid foundations of what it means to be successful. And I have the opportunity to do that for years through athletics, and I've helped a number of kids do so. And my philosophy, as you talked about, and I think the conversation that you and I had, was a little bit different than a lot of coaches out there think. You know, it's not just about winning a game. But sports is a great mechanism to teach young people the important things in life, how to be prepared, how to set goals, how to perform, and how to go out and not worry about the outcome of the game necessary during the game, but to focus on what needs to be done to continually progress through the game to ultimately get to the victory that you want to have. And in life, it's the same way. We can't really put our dreams out in front of us and then blindly kind of go in that direction. You know, we want to find that momentum and be able to build on each success that we have in life so that as we get closer to our goals, they become easier and easier to obtain. And, you know, we had that conversation and you had asked me to come on the show, and I was really excited about that because I love sharing this information. But a little bit about me. I am a husband of more than 26 years. I've got two children and one grandchild, so you know we've done very well as a family in a time where families are hard to sometimes stay together, and you see a lot of different things happen in people's lives, and we certainly had those up and downs, but we've transitioned all of the things that we believe about success into our relationships with each other, my wife and I with each other, as well as with our kids. I'm a business owner. I own my own business consulting firm where I consult entrepreneurs and authors on the power of building a consistent brand and a powerful brand image and how that connects to their business and connects their business to their market. So I am also a sports coach, as we just kind of talked about. I have coached for well over 20 years at this point, coached multiple sports, football, baseball, some basketball, mostly football, on every level from Little League to middle school up through high school with varied success. I've had undefeated teams, championship teams. I've had players go on to college and players go on into the pros. But the one thing is that I've never taught a child how to win. It's never been an emphasis on winning. The emphasis has always been on the performance, on performing to the best of their ability. And as we talked about earlier, some of the things that we're going to talk about later on in this interview or tonight. But through that, what I've found is that, you know, when you prepare and when you teach a child to perform, winning takes care of itself. So very excited to be here and talk a little bit about that tonight.
Oh, great to have you on the show. So Jim shared about himself so beautifully. I would like to add a little bit about him is that, you know, not only as a human being, not only as a coach, as a business owner and consultant, he provides invaluable life lessons. And his dedication to football coaching has led his teams to win multiple championships, enjoy undefeated seasons. And more importantly, like Jim mentioned, it's not about winning. It's about performing. It's about showing up as your best. And under his tutelage, many athletes have been able to secure college scholarships and move into NFL. And his focus on performance rather than winning has been the key to Jim's and his students' success in all areas of life. Now a little bit about myself. I am the founder of the DP Leadership and Wellness Coach. I coach over six different continents. I'm an international leadership wellness coach. I've worked with professionals. I've worked with coaches, entrepreneurs, and youth through inspired leadership focused on tailored plans where I help them embrace their inner confidence and continuously endeavor for enriching their life to desired potential and success realization. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and get started on the questions. So Jim, as a coach, could you please shed light on the relationship between a coach and players, coach and parents, and parent and coach?
Well, that's...
I know, I'm...
Yeah, that's a great question, and there are three really different dynamics in those relationships. And as a coach, sometimes we lose sight of the importance of establishing the parameters of those relationships in that order. You know, first of all, the coach and player relationship is unique because a lot of times, especially in youth athletics, the child is sometimes meeting that coach for the first time. So it's a new person in their life that they have to build that relationship. And there's a lot of trust that has to go on for a young person to respect and understand the person who's giving them direction. So the relationship there has to be one that can be molded and grown and established with the trust and with the all the factors that are necessary for that child to develop. The other thing in that relationship is that for the coach has to be able to see that young person as who they are. And this is where I think a lot of coaches get it wrong. I was very fortunate early on in my coaching career to pick up on this piece and to understand that, you know, children or people in general develop at different stages and at different paces. So as a coach, it's important to understand the development cycle or development process within each child on your team. We often like to think that we can treat all athletes the same or all children the same, but the truth of it is that they don't all respond to the same stimulants. So as a coach, you know, there may be some child on our football team that maybe works better if I get excited and raise my voice and get them excited, and you know, they may perform better towards that. There may be some athletes on our team that don't respond well to that, and I may have to put my arm around that child and bring them in and talk to them on their level to get them to understand and be comfortable with that instruction. So to understand that, and then to understand not just the communication or the way that a child likes to receive that communication, but also to see and understand their development process, and seeing some children will get it the first time. I had an athlete who is now in the NFL who, when he first started playing with me, the first day of practice when we put football pads on, he'd never touched a football before in his life. But the first time I put the ball in his hands, he immediately lowered his shoulder, covered the ball, made contact with a would-be tackler, powered his legs up, extended his body, and drove through the tackle. That's a child that understood it very quickly and got it right away. And he developed his skill sets very easily. We had another athlete on that same team that was hesitant, was nervous, was shy, did not understand the techniques as well right off the bat. It took time to get him to understand and play at a great level. And that particular athlete didn't really develop until his middle school years. But then all of a sudden something clicked, and he went on to be an all-state receiver and went on to play in college on a scholarship as a wide receiver. So you have to be able as a coach to understand your relationship with each individual player and see that for what it is. The relationship between coach and parent is another unique relationship, and one that I think is extremely important to establish as a coach, especially as the season just gets started. Because if you can establish a relationship with your parents as a coach, you can diffuse a lot of the would-be problems that might pop up during the season. We always see stories in the news of parents getting upset at games and lashing out at coaches or lashing out at players and overreacting on either the coach's side or the parent's side, and causing, you know, these major issues that children honestly should not see or be a part of. There's no room for that in a developmental game like youth athletics, but we see it all the time. And to me, based on my experience, the issue with that is that the coach hasn't done his job. The coach hasn't established the relationship with the parents and set the guidelines for what needs to take place. For myself, one of the techniques I would use is early on in the season, all teams, whether you're, you know, whatever sport you're playing, if you've had a child in athletics, you know that at some point early on, there's going to be a coach-parent meeting where the coach can come up and talk to the parents. Usually they talk about what the goals are for the season, what the coach's plan is, what the practice schedule is going to be like, what to expect as we move through, and things of that nature. I would take it one step further when I was coaching, and what I would do is I would wait till the second week of practice, after I've had some time to bond with the team, I've had some time to establish the relationship between the coach and the athletes that I needed to establish, and then I would wait till at the end of practice. So a lot of coaches want to do it before practice starts or after practice ends. For me, I would wait till we had just finished practice, and then I would have my teams line up like we would always do before practice. We always line up in lines, and we do our exercises and our warm-ups. So I'd have them line back up in those lines, and then I would have them remove their helmet and take a knee. And I would instruct the team to stay put. Just be calm and be still. I'm going to go talk to your parents for about 15 minutes, and what I want is for you to stay right where you are. And my other coach and staff would be down walking amongst the team, talking to them, keeping them engaged, but keeping them in line. And then I would go and talk to the parents, and I would try to position myself so that the parents had to look through me and see their children, their athletes on the field. So that way they could look through me and see the team in a line on their knee and being still, being behave. And then I would have a conversation with them, and I would spend about 15, 20 minutes talking about all the things that you would talk about as a coach, what the expectations were, what the goals were for the season, all of that. And then at the end, I wouldn't even look back at the team, and I would just look at the parents, and I would say, now, they haven't moved, have they? And the parents would, of course, say no. And I would ask them, how many of you think that you could take 43 8- and 9-year-olds who have just finished running around, knocking each other down and playing games, and get them to calm down, take a knee, and not move for 20 minutes? And, of course, they would all and that's the reaction they would all have. They would all laugh. Of course they're not going to be able to do that. And then I would say, but I can. And this is what I would see as a parent. And I would say, you know, I can control what happens on the football field. What I can't control is what happens off the football field. And that's where we need a partner. My goal for your athlete is to develop and understand the game of football in a way that they're going to perform it at a very high level and that they're going to perform very well. And if you let me do my job, I promise you that I'm going to get your athlete to that point. And then I would go on to establish the rules of our relationship. And I would let them know, I want your input, but I want you to give it to me. So if you have an issue with anything that you see going on the field, whether you think your child needs to work harder, if you think your child is being overworked, if you think your child needs more playing time, come to me and talk to me about that. And I will promise you I will be open, I will listen to you, and we'll have a conversation. It doesn't mean you're always going to be right. It doesn't mean I'm always going to be right. But we'll talk about it, and together we'll decide what's the best way to handle the situation. And as long as we kept that communication open, we wouldn't have any problems. And then I would instruct them to, when their athlete leaves the field, let me worry about football. And when they leave the field, you put your arm around them. You tell them you love them. You tell them they did a great job, and then you go home with that child. And when you have an issue, don't talk to the child about the issue because they don't understand. But talk to me. You know, come to me and let's talk about that. And when you establish the relationship, we never had any problems with parents in over 20 years of coaching that was not able to be worked out and talked out. I've had parents approach me just like every coach has. But I've never one time had an argument with a parent, had a parent go, you know, ballistic on the sideline, had a parent take their child off my team or anything like that. And it's just because you understand the relationship dynamics and you establish the guidelines and then you hold up to your end of the bargain. And as long as you keep those relationships going, you'll have a much, much, much happier time. And then the third relationship are the parents and the athletes. And as I said, you just establish that up front. And as a parent, the hardest thing for me to do as a coach and a parent was to watch my son be coached by someone else because I wanted to be the one to interject. But I always put myself on other teams, and I never coached my son in his sports. I always let another coach coach him. I let other teams coach him. That way I could enjoy the relationship with him as the athlete and me as the father, not the coach. But that relationship is so completely different than coach-athlete or parent-coach-athlete because I can remove myself from, the after-practice routines of grilling, you know, your athlete on what they did wrong, what they didn't do, what they can do better, what they shouldn't do, all of those things that the coach should take care of. It removes you from that, and it allows you to be the support system that child needs. And when you let a young athlete, a youth athlete, get the support that he needs from the parents, have them, you know, understand that you're in their corner regardless if they have a great practice or a bad practice or they perform great on the field or they make a mistake and cost the game. That child needs comfort. That child needs support and he needs love, and he's going to get that from you as the parent, and that's where he's going to look for it from or she's going to look for it from. So the relationship that you have with your athlete as a parent needs to be one of complete support, and if you have any issues with the way the team's being run, those should really go back to the coach and have those, you know, grown-up conversations between you and the coach and get things settled that way. But those relationships, when you keep them separated, you keep and understand the dynamics of each of the three, and if you, your athlete, and your parent can all interact in such a way that those relationships stay healthy, you'll have an incredible experience both on and off the field.
Oh my goodness, so many points resonated with me, Jim, that I can't even tell you. So one of the points that I really loved was that every child has a different timeline for development. And the examples you gave were phenomenal. So it's not only this coaching arena that we have to look out for that. This lesson could be applied in your own family. Let's say you have two different kids, and they may be close in age. However, if your first child developed at a faster pace, that does not mean that your second child will be developing at the same pace. So it's about identifying the uniqueness, the individuality, and celebrating the individuality of each child, respecting that, and treating them as an individual and creating that customized coaching or customized relationship with them where we are honoring their individuality and letting them develop at their own pace and helping them realize their potential. And another thing that resonated with me was creating the framework with the parents and you saying that you did not have a single relationship with a parent go sour. You had all these children achieving greatness in their lives, and it was because you were open to listening, you were open in communication, and yet at the same time, you set the framework of expectations. And usually in the relationships, that's where the relationships tend to go a downward spiral because it's something happens and it's not meeting our expectations. However, if the expectations are defined up front, and if you're clear about it, then we have a healthy relationship and people are open to learning and people are open to open communication. So great points.
Thank you. Those are lessons that were, you know, learned and developed and witnessed from or brought in by witnessing other people have issues with it and just kind of understanding that and then making those changes. And you're absolutely right. These principles carry over to your family as well as, athletics or coaching on the field. They also work well with business and understanding employees or teams that you may work with on a project. It's still the same. People are people, and they all develop at different levels. Some get technology quick. Some can't understand technology. Some understand philosophies. Others may struggle with that, and you just have to understand that and be able to adapt and work with people with where they are.
So true. Technology and I. I'll raise my hand first. I don't learn as fast as today's kids. And that's where we can have the mentoring coming in, not only from adults to children. Our children can teach us as well. So, for example, my son teaches me the technology all the time. So moving on to the next aspect is that sports is not about winning. Sports is about performance. It's your philosophy. It's about learning the sportsmanship. So, Jim, what are your thoughts about developing leaders as a sports coach?
Oh, well, that's the one thing. I love leadership. And I think that as a coach, it's always beneficial to have as many leaders as you can build. You hear a lot of talk and development about leadership. You read a lot of books. There are a lot of people talking about it and teaching it and coaching leadership. And it's funny when I hear people, what they believe is the best way to measure leadership. There are so many different ways to measure it. People measure leadership by the effectiveness of the team. If a team's winning, then they've got a great coach. They've got great leadership because their team is winning. If their team is disciplined, oh, they've got a great leader because the team is very disciplined. If a business is making a lot of money, oh, they've got great leadership within that company. They're doing so well on the bottom line, or so many number of ways that people measure the effectiveness of great leadership. For me, to measure leadership, the best way that I can see to measure leadership is really about the other leaders. How many leaders are you developing? One of the things that stood out to me several years ago was there was a coach in the NFL who coached the San Francisco 49ers. His name was Bill Walsh. And Bill Walsh set the team of the 80s for the 49ers, led them to multiple Super Bowls, built a dynasty that went on for 10 to 12 years of just dominance in their division. But the greatest thing when you ask people about what kind of coach Bill Walsh was, he was a leader. And they measure that because off of his team, there were nearly 16 coaches that had coached under him who had went on to have success as a head coach in the NFL. So this was a guy who coached coaches to be coaches. He coached coaches to step up and be head coaches. Whoever he was involved with, when they were finished with him, they were a better leader. And that's how you measure a leader. How many leaders in your team and your family are you developing? And for me, on our team, that's what it was all about. It was all about getting young athletes, especially in the youth and middle school levels, to understand the power they could have as a leader on the field, a leader in the classroom, a leader in their family. And we would talk about that. We would talk about what leadership was. We would talk about what leaders do, how they live by example and put themselves in a position that other people are willing to follow them, which is, I think, a very key element to leadership. It's not about being in position or having, you know, the captain symbol on the chest or being labeled a captain or put in a position. In football, we often think the quarterback is just the leader, but that's a position of leadership. But he still has to be able to step up and carry himself in such a way that the rest of the team believes in him, that the rest of the team will step up and play harder for him because he's the leader and he's asking them to. And what we found is that over the first several weeks of practice, we would see it develop, and then a little bit further on, we would see it develop. And then all of a sudden, you'll see like a situation would occur in practice where at the end of practice, we would run our sprints, and we would run our laps. We would do conditioning. But we would do conditioning at the end of practice, where a lot of coaches and teams like to do their conditioning in the beginning of practice or even take a day of the week to focus on conditioning. We would always do our conditioning at the end of practice. And the reason for that is because football is a four-quarter sport. And oftentimes we get tired in that fourth quarter. And if I could get my guys to understand after a long, hard practice, after three quarters of play, we've got one more quarter to put all the energy we can into it. And I would teach them that so that they would work harder at the end of practice than they did at the beginning of practice. But what we would see is some of the heavier kids would have troubles with that. And as we were running our laps around the field, we would see them slow down and some of them even start to walk. All of a sudden, you would see a dynamic shift in our team where the leaders of the team would, on their own, with no one having to tell them to or prompt them, they would go run across the field and they would catch up after they had finished their laps. They would run and catch up to some of the bigger kids, some of the kids that were struggling. And they would jog next to them and they would compel them to keep moving and they would encourage them. And what they were doing without even knowing it is they were being leaders. They had stepped up into a position that they knew they could help this player become better than he thought he could be. And by doing so, the team would be better for it. And so when you develop that kind of leadership idea or athletes who understand leadership at that level, your team, you know, there's no wonder that our teams performed as well as they did. And I take very little credit for that. I simply go out and do the things that I believe are right, and I teach the kids what I think they need to learn. But they're the ones that go out and perform, and they're the ones that accept what you talk about and accept those lessons and then put them into play. So for our teams, you know, I want as many leaders as I can have. There's an old saying that sometimes we have too many chiefs and not enough Indians. But when it comes to leadership, I want as many leaders as we can possibly have. I want people who aren't afraid to put themselves on the line when the time comes and set themselves aside for someone else when the time comes as well. And so that is extremely important to me to teach leadership at that level.
Mm. And you are absolutely right, teaching children to be the leaders, because from what I've heard, and it's been mentioned in a couple of studies, that a lot of corporate are seeing the problems they're seeing stem from elementary school. And if we start building leaders in our children, then think about it. It's not only them that they're impacting. They are going to go out of the school and go in so many different directions. They're going to be going to the colleges, going into corporate world. And as we develop leaders, they are going to develop leaders in turn, because your definition of leadership, that's got the truth to it, that a leader is who develops others to be leaders, because it's very much similar to give a man a fish. He'll eat for a day. Teach a man how to fish, he'll eat for the rest of his life. So similarly, if a leader builds a leader, then you're creating a legacy, because you're making them independent. And as they become an independent leader, they're going to go out and do what a leader is supposed to do. So excellent advice. Wow. So we have talked about the leadership. And for us to pull these children from the new technology that has become embedded and become a part of their lives, where they love to play on the computer, they want to play the Wii U, the Xbox, and oh gosh, we could go on and on with the names of the technology, where they're completely engrossed in the virtual world. How can we motivate and impact the youth to the real world towards a bright future?
And you know, that's such a good question, and one that is ever growing more important. But you know, we've always, if you look back in history, there have always been distractions. There have always been something there to pull a young person away from what they maybe should be doing. The big thing is for me is that as a parent, that's where it would start. A coach can do some things once he gets a hold of the child, or once the child gets to his realm, which would be the athletic. But as a parent, you have to be able to get involved with your children. You have to be able to, know who they are and engage them. A lot of times, it's what we see for me, what I've witnessed, is that children will do the things that are presented to them. And it's easier as parents sometimes just to give them an Xbox or give them a Game Boy or give them, you know, a TV to go keep them occupied so that now I can do the things that I need to do. And what we see is, especially in today's society is so distracted. I was talking with someone not that long ago, and I was sharing with him. He was talking about the growth of ADD in today's world, ADD, ADHD. And I said, you know, for me, ADD has really become acquired distraction disorder. It's less about the ability or the lack of the ability to keep your attention focused, and more about that there are just so many things that we try to cram into our life that it's very hard to focus on any of it. If I'm talking to entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs are the worst. I'm an entrepreneur. All my friends are entrepreneurs, and we're the worst. We want to have a business. We want to have our websites up. We want to write books. We want to do marketing. We want to do copywriting. We want to do product creation. We want all these things. We want to go to events. We want to travel. Oh, where's the family? Now we've got to spend time with the family too. So it can be very easy as a parent to allow yourself to get overwhelmed, which will then allow your children to sort of find their own things to keep them engaged. So the first step is really, as a parent, is to look at your family, look at your life, and figure out what you need to adjust or tweak or change to really be engaged with your children, to understand who they are, what their likes and dislikes are, how can you get involved in them, in their lives, and be engaged. And that way you know where you can sort of direct that child to develop more, as opposed to just putting things off on them. The other thing is to, sometimes limit what they can and can't do. If there are Xbox and TVs and all of that, then put some limits on it. Allow them to have that time, but then also have equal time where they have to go outside and play. They have to go read a book or do something developmental, whether it's music and learning an instrument, or art and learning how to express themselves creatively, or whatever it is that your child is kind of naturally drawn to. There'll be a way that they want to voice who they are. And when you can pick up on that, introduce that to them at an early age and let them start developing their likes and dislikes. I have two children. One is an athlete. My son wanted to play every sport possible. We went from baseball right into basketball, right into track, right back into football. It was just ongoing, never stopping. Our daughter has no interest in sports. She loves to sit and watch football with me because it's important to me, but she has no interest in playing sports or understanding sports. What she loves is music. So we get her a guitar, and she focuses on trying to learn to play guitar and singing and her art. She loves to do artwork, so we focus her time, by giving her art lessons and all the tools that she needs to express herself through her art. And, each child develops very well. They both do wonderful in school. They both do incredibly well within their communities of friends and all of that. But each grew through different means. So don't always, as a parent, try to think that your child needs athletics or try to think that your child needs, one thing or the other. But really engage with them, find out what their interest is, find out what their passions are, and allow that to be the escape that they need rather than, putting something in their hands just to keep them quiet and calm while you're able to focus on the things you want to focus on or do.
Great point. Definitely a great point. See what they're interested in and do not project what you are interested in or what you think is good for them. Because if you're projecting and pushing the child in the direction that you think they should be going in, is what's going to happen is they're going to get disengaged. And when a kid is disengaged, they're not going to be motivated. And if they're not motivated, the performance is not there. Excellent point.
Yeah, that is so true. And one thing that I see a lot of, especially with parents of athletes, is we assume as parents that our child, because they're our child, they're made up from us. We assume that they're going to have the same interests, the same likes that we did, or that they're going to be very similar to us. I can't tell you how many dads that I've had to pull aside and say, "Listen, you're reliving your high school glory, trying to live that through your child and expecting him to perform the way you think you performed." And the issue with that a lot of times is our memory of how we were at that age is greater than what it really was. We remember things better than they actually were. So a lot of times I'll have fathers who believe that they were, so much better at maybe being a running back. And they don't understand why their child's not at that level. And, you have to understand that your child's not you. He's not built the same way. He's not the same size. He doesn't have the same mindset. In fact, he's a blend of you and your wife. So it's the two of you who created this child. Both of you are in there. There's no way he's going to be a direct clone of you. So he's not going to perform the same way. He may not even like the same things that you liked. When I was a young athlete, my love was baseball. I played some football, but my love was baseball. My son, his love was football. He played some baseball, but his love was football. So it's, we can't assume that our children are going to do the things that we do, are going to like the things that we like. We have to really understand who they are as individuals, as people. Because at an early age, even though we think that as a 8 or 9 or 10-year-old child, that they don't know who they are yet, they're learning. And they may not know how to express that clearly yet, but they're learning who they are. And they know what they like and they know what they don't like. And if you pay attention, you can see it. You can start to understand it. You can help them figure out who they are and what they want to do. And that way the child develops, you know, into some things that he or she really believes is important to them. And when they find what's important to them, you'll find out they'll put the Xbox down. They'll put the TV down themselves to go do something that they absolutely love to do. So it's really important that you understand that you're not your child, that your child has his own unique flavor and flair, and you just have to understand what that is and be engaged so that you can help them direct that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep. They have their own unique flavors. I'm hearing that the first time. I really like it, that children are their own individuals. They are their own beings. And you're just helping that plant and that flower to blossom and bloom and gain their unique fragrance, their unique flavor, and reach their potentials. So in your experience, when you have taught the children so openly, what are the effects you have seen?
Oh, my goodness. Right off the bat, we understand the difference that we have as coaches, the way we approach our kids. And the great thing there is that you asked, you know, from teaching them so openly. And I think that that's the key, is to understand that, you know, even at 8 and 9 year olds, young people will do the things that you ask them to do. And you would be amazed at what they can retain and grasp and understand and actually put to use. A lot of coaches that I coached against at that level before I moved up into middle school and high school, they would look at a little league team, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old team, and they would keep everything so basic because they couldn't possibly learn a complicated blocking scheme or understand what it really meant to play positional defense. Coaches would line 11 kids up in a formation and tell them all just to go tackle the ball because that was easier to understand. It was easier to get them to understand and be able to do, whereas I wouldn't. I would teach them football, and I would teach them what each position's responsibility was and what they were supposed to do on each play. And when they saw something happen in the offense, how to adjust to that and make a play. And I would focus my efforts, and of course I would bring it down into a conversation that they could understand, and we didn't make it overcomplicated, but we didn't oversimplify it either. And what we found out is that by the middle of the season, three quarters of the way into the season, we would see that our teams, our second and third string players could beat just about any team that we faced, could beat their first string players. Because not that we had better athletes, not that we were just stacked and loaded with kids who were just incredible talents, but we had children that understood how to play the game and how to play it right. And we would, you could see the effect that would have right there in the middle of the season. Long-term effects, as I said at the beginning, I mean, we've had so many kids go on and play in college. But more importantly, we saw grade scores come up in schools. We saw GPAs rise. We saw kids with their families interact with their families differently than kids that were playing on other teams. Some of my athletes, I think we had one story. I'll tell you a real quick story to kind of show you where certain things happen at times that when you see it, you know that you've had an impact, and the impact was really, really a great impact. And it impacts you when you see this as much as you've impacted them. And one of those lessons was one of my athletes as a senior in high school, was really excelling. He was head and shoulders above anybody in our district, just an incredible athlete, played quarterback, and literally every college in the nation was courting him. He had, you know, Florida State and Boston College and Nebraska and all the big colleges were sending scouts. Some head coaches were coming to the games. But every Friday night, the stands were just full of scouts watching this young man play. And I knew, and so did the whole coaching staff, we knew what team he wanted to go, what college he wanted to go to, and who he wanted to play for in college. But he wouldn't commit, and he wouldn't give anybody his commitment so he could lock that decision down. And about halfway through the season, I had a conversation with him, and I said, Logan, I said, what is keeping you from committing? I said, I know that, you know who you want to play for. You know where you want to go, but you're not committing to that. And I said, why is that? I said, you know that if you get hurt, a lot of those scouts and those coaches go away, and a lot of those college offers will go away. I said, so you really need to think about who you want to play for. And he told me, he said, every Friday night, those scouts and those coaches are here to see me play. He said, but while they're watching me play, they're seeing the entire team. And he said, there are six or seven guys on this team that deserve scholarships. And if I commit, they don't. Well,
you had developed a leader.
And you know, that's the kind of story that, you know, it sends chills up my arms just now talking about it. I mean, it's that's when you know that you've done good work. And
yes. Logan, and this is a kid in high school.
And this is a high school kid, and he got his scholarship.
Oh, my goodness.
Sure enough, we had six other members of that team either get Division I or Division II scholarships to play football.
Oh, how wonderful. See, and this is what we talk about, the leadership. And it's, again, oh, gosh, it sent the goosebumps up my arms as well. It's just not about yourself. It's about paying it forward. And, oh, my goodness. And he didn't even share it with anyone, huh? You had to ask him about that.
Yep.
Just what an incredible kid.
Just something he knew he had to do.
Oh, wow. Bless his heart. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So I know, Jim, that, you know, your mantra is stop existing and start living. Please share how you've lived and taught this principle as you've climbed the success ladder.
Oh, my goodness. And that is my mantra. As you know, we've talked about that before. But that's truly a message that I have to live by. And too many people in the world today are simply existing. We get up in the morning, we go to work, we get up and we do the things that we do every day. We come home, we spend time with the family, we eat our dinner, we go to bed, we wake up the next day and we do the same thing. And that's a life. I mean, that's you know, doing something. But do we catch ourselves just existing in that day-to-day and being very comfortable with where we are? In that situation, it's very hard to grow. It's very hard to do more or to have a real significant impact. And for me, I want to be more than that. You know, I want to do more than just the day to day. I want to make sure that every day when I wake up, that today is better than yesterday. Yesterday is done, regardless of what happened, how bad it was, how great it was. It doesn't matter. Yesterday is over. Today is the day where we can actually do something new, do something different. It's a new day. We're a new person. Even if, you know, we wake up in the same skin and in the same body, we're still a different person because we don't know what the day holds. And when you stop existing and you really start living, you put your energy and effort into striving to do more today than you did yesterday, you can't help but to grow. You can't help but to move forward. And, you know, I've lived my life, my entire life I've lived that way, or tried to. And that's not something that necessarily came natural to me. My background is a not one that you would expect someone in my position now to come from. You know, my father, I grew up without a father. My father was an abusive man and an alcoholic, and my mom left the house with her children when I was two, and my father was never in my life. He never came back into my life or attempted to you know, meet with me or get to know who I was. So I grew up without a father. I grew up without a lot of money. I grew up in you know, poor areas of town, and you know, there have been trials and trials and trials throughout my life. But my mom was always just so good about teaching me just to move, just to keep moving, just to move forward in spite of everything that happens, regardless of what happened. You know, move forward and do something different. And she would encourage. And then when I found athletics, that's really where I found the spot in my life that I could really excel and really get lost in. And on the baseball field, I was an equal. It didn't matter if I had as much money as the rest of the kids. It didn't matter that, you know, my dad wasn't in the stands like theirs was. To me, it just mattered. Let's get on the field and let me perform and do the thing that I love. And I found that I could do that very well. So from there, great coaches in my life who brought me along and really kind of took me under their wing and showed me the value of preparation and performance and understanding to strive to do more. And I really resonated with that idea of striving to do more. And that's where Stop Existing and Start Living came from. It was about that, you know, don't get caught up in your situation, but really look for those avenues that you can take whatever situation you're in, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's whatever the situation is, but start looking at how you can take that situation and use it to catapult you to where you want to go. And Stop Existing, Start Living has done that. So whether we're talking in my business, or if we're talking about in our family, if we're talking about coaching, I want everyone around me to grow. I want everyone around me to do better today than they did yesterday and to move forward and constantly grow. And that's what that is, and that's why that's important to me.
Fantastic. How true it is. Because you don't want to live your life and think about what were the memorable moments that I had. You don't want to let the days pass by. You don't want to let the years pass by and look back and see it just as a blur. You want to remember those exciting moments. You want to remember those memorable moments when you were alive. Then mm-hmm. You can go back and relive those moments and say, oh, you know, I lived my life. It was not just passing through it and not asking your question, what if I had lived my life? So as Jim said, stop existing and start living. What a profound strategy for life, because you don't want to ask yourself the question, what if I'd lived my life? And you could have let the situation become a handicap. You could have existed in a victim mode. However, you did not let that happen. You found that outlet. You found that venue where you could excel. And where you brought up really a great point, that everybody was an equal. So there's always an outlet for your interest. It could be art. You could be in an art classroom. You could be in a music classroom, whether it's given by community center, and they're not very expensive. So don't let your situation hinder you. And don't let your situation become your crutches. It's about, yes, even if that situation is, get outside it, think outside the box, and as Jim said, stop living and start existing. Beautiful. Wow. So as you have mentioned this beautiful goal that you live every single day, so many times it happens that, you know, we look back upon the past year and we find that we have not accomplished our goals that we had set out to. So if you would like to share your goals with our audience, please do share with it. And as you go through this year, what is it that you would like to accomplish, and what are the strategies you're planning to use to accomplish those goals?
Good question. And I think this is something we all struggle with from time to time, is especially when we are at the beginning of a year. And I know we're a couple months in now, but we're still pretty close to the beginning of the year. But so many times I hear people that I talk with or consult with who have set their plans for the year, and then by February they've already, you know, scrapped those plans and said those dreams will never happen, and they go right back into what they've always known. For me, each year I look at what we've done and where we are, and I try to see where can we grow from here. Is what we're doing still having the impact that we want to have? And everything for me is completely based, probably as you can tell throughout this call, everything for me is completely based on the impact that I can have on people who are engaged with me, whether that's in our business, we're talking about our clients. I want to know, are we still having an impact on them in such a way that they're growing in their business the way they need, or are the things that we're doing, you know, giving them the tools that they need to really spring forward? So always I'm focused on my impact on others, which I think for me allows me to really have the passion and drive to keep focused on what I want to accomplish. So when you talk about how do you keep yourself, you know, on that track, I think you've got to know your why. You've got to know why the change is necessary, why the direction that you've put in place is important, and that outcome that you want, that why needs to be big enough to pull you. It needs to be an inspiration, not a motivation. And the reason I say that is I love to motivate people. I love to get on stage and speak and be a motivational speaker. But the issue with motivation is short term. You can, if a car runs out of gas and you push it, that's motivation. You can push a car and you can make it roll and you can push it a specific distance or a certain distance, and that's motivation. But with motivation, and as you're pushing that car, if you come up against a curb or a rock or a hill, all of a sudden the motivation runs out and the car ceases to move. But when you put gas in the car and then you get in and you start the car and you push the gas pedal, that's more like inspiration. And inspiration drives from the inside, not from the outside. It's not a push, it's an internal pull. And that inspiration allows that car to drive over rocks, to drive over curbs, to drive up hills and down hills and around corners. And it doesn't lose its momentum. It doesn't lose its power as fast as it would with just motivation. So are you motivated or are you inspired? Is it something you'd like to do, or are you doing something you love to do? For me, I'm inspired to help people. So when I set my goals, I know that when I reach them, I'm going to have the biggest impact I can have. So when I include my passion into my goal setting, I'm setting goals that I have to hit. There's no question. It's not things that I'd like to hit. There's things that I must hit. For my business this year, 2015 is a shift for my wife and I. We're transitioning from the consulting arena where we've done consulting and brand building and brand assessment for companies over the past 15 to 20 years. We're still going to do that, but we're transitioning our company more into the motivational realm, more into the inspirational realm, and we're going to increase the public speaking. We're going to increase the coaching and mindset training that we want to do, because this is where we're being drawn to, and this is where other people, just like when we had our conversation, Divya, this is what drew us together, was the passion and the connection that we have in this arena. So this is where we're going to focus more of our energy for 2015, and that's important because we know it's a lot of work to be on stages. We know it's a lot of work to write and publish books. We know it's a lot of work to establish yourself as an expert in this field, but we're committed to make that happen. So our goal in 2015, by the end of 2015, is to have ourselves completely established in this arena. And I think when you set your goals, you have to be realistic. So anyone on the call who's listening now or listens in and is at that point where they're really starting to set their path, you know, think big, allow yourself to dream big. Several years ago or a few years ago, my dream was to be on a big stage and speak to people from all over the world. Since that dream, and guess what's happened? I've spoken in Australia, I've spoken in the UK, I've spoken all across the country to thousands of people who have been motivated and inspired by the words that I've been able to share or by the stories that I've been able to tell. And we've heard feedback from people whose lives were changed. And for me, that's huge. But it doesn't happen if I don't dream big. So don't be afraid to dream big. But when you build your goals, build them in such a way that you understand how to go from one step to the next and let each goal sort of naturally drive you there. When I coach football, the first thing that I do is I get the team together before the season and I let them decide what our goal is. Now, inevitably, as you can imagine, they're always going to say, we want to win a championship. And that's a great goal. That's a great goal. That's the ultimate goal you can have for a football season is to win the championship. So, but to win the championship, then I work backwards and I say, you know, to win the championship, we have to make the playoffs. And in order to make the playoffs, we've got to win 8 games. We know that. So now our goal is to win 8 games. But to win 8 games, we have to win 1 game. To win 1 game, we need to get past the first game. So to win that first game, we've got to work hard in practice. So we set our goals backwards from our dreams. And now our goal, initial goal that we're looking at right now is let's have great practices. Let's put the game plans in and let's have great practices. Once we establish that goal, then our next goal becomes who are we facing in our first game and let's win that first game. And then when we win that first game, it's how do we get to that 8th win? And then when we win that 8th game, you see momentum starts to pick up and then all of a sudden your goals just sort of naturally lead you through your journey, and ultimately we win a championship. And that's what we'll do in 2015. We know where we want to be. We know where we need to be by the end of the year, and we know the steps that we have to get in place. So already, just in this year, recently, just for instance, I was just flown out to Las Vegas and interviewed by a former Super Bowl winning championship quarterback, Joe Theismann, who played in the NFL, who's a huge celebrity, and he interviewed me on what we're doing in the mindset and in the coaching, just like this interview. So now I have that interview with a celebrity sports athlete interviewing me that I can use and build off of for this year. That's incredible, and that moves me forward. Our book is 3/4 of the way done and being edited and should be out early to mid-April or May. So, you know, we're getting that done. And with each victory that we have, it just keeps pulling us further down till we'll ultimately end up where we want to be in 2015. So anyone listening on the call, you know, dream big, understand your why, let your dream and your understanding of your why really drive you step by step all the way through the process to end up ultimately where you want to be.
Very profound. And Jim, know your why. That is so dear to my heart because I recently co-authored one of the books and the name of the book is Voyage to Your Vision. And what I wrote about was discover your why. Why and inspiration? Because inspiration will take you long ways, whereas motivation will take you short ways. And it's just not about living life. It's also about having that dream, thinking and dreaming big. And as you dream big and live your values, if you're living your values, then you'll stay on track for the goals. And congratulations, Jim, on being interviewed by Joe Theismann. That's amazing.
Thank you. It was awesome.
And I bet the experience must have been really amazing.
It was so surreal. Growing up as a 13, 14-year-old, playing football in the backyard, Joe was one of the athletes that, you know, we all aspire to be. He was playing at that time and was on the top of his game. And I shared with him, I said, you know, I remember as a child telling my friends, one day I'm going to meet, you know, one of my guys. And I had two or three athletes that really, really, you know, wanted to meet really bad. And so for me to sit and be interviewed by someone who I looked up to, that was just an incredible feeling for me.
Oh, yeah, that must have been an incredible experience. So you have shared such beautiful philosophies with us. I really appreciate and acknowledge you and thank you for gracing our show with your wisdom and your wonderful presence. So one of the things I would like to ask you as our parting question is, what is two or three takeaways that you would like to share with our audience? And if they have a question and if they want to reach you, where can you be reached?
Ah, great question. I think, you know, a couple of things to take away are, of course, like we just talked about, know what your passion is. And I'm not someone that tells you, as a business consultant, I would never tell you to turn your passions into profits. I think we hear that a lot. We hear a lot of people talk about find something that you're really passionate about and you can, you know, have a career out of it. Well, the honest thing is that may or may not be true. If your passion has a lot of other people who are interested in what you're passionate about, you maybe could do that. But what I'm talking about is find something you can be passionate about. I'm not always passionate about the work that I do. I'm not always passionate about sitting in front of a computer and typing words. But what I am passionate about is connecting with others in a way that they understand that they can be more than they ever thought they could be. And if that takes me writing words down on paper, then I'm going to be passionate about that. Whether it's my favorite thing to do or not, I'm going to be passionate about that because of what the outcome is going to be. So find the things that you can be passionate about, know your why, and then focus on that. The second takeaway I would say to take away from this is to stop existing and start living. Really investigate your life and see the areas where you're just kind of going with the status quo, just kind of following along. And if you're a person who has said this in the past, that life seems like it's passing you by, and I talk to a lot of people all over the world, and inevitably I have one or two who will say, I just feel like life is passing me by. Well, if life's passing you by, what you have to understand is life is life. The world turns the same speed for me as it does for you. I have the same amount of hours in a day as you do. I have the same gravitational force on me that you have on you. So the world and the universe rolls for me just like it rolls for you. The difference is that I've decided to be involved. I've decided to get off the sideline and submerge myself in life as it happens, as opposed to standing by waiting for something to take place or allowing my situation to keep me from being involved. The world's not passing you by. The world is just reacting. It's just doing what it does. You're the one that needs to decide to jump in, grab hold, and really take advantage of everything that's put in front of you. So I would encourage you to take on that mantra, stop existing and start living, and really start living the life in its full entirety and be all that you can be. And if you have kids out there, the third takeaway from me, and maybe the most important, is to really, really, really get engaged with your children. Figure out who they are. Figure out what they love and figure out a way that you can help them grow that passion and connect with their voice so that they can learn to express themselves in the best way they possibly can and allow them to grow and excel and really strive. We all say we want the best for our children. We all tell our children they can be anything. But the bottom line is, as parents, we really should focus on the best ways to allow them and to guide them and to give them the tools and platform they need to really become who they need to be.
Ah, yes, definitely. And if the audience wanted to reach you, how could they reach you, Jim?
It's real simple. Right now, you can go to facebook.com/ Live Life Revolution. That's our Facebook page, and you can chime in there, and we've got lots of room for engagement and conversation. And my wife and I actually, you know, we man that page, so all of your interaction will be straight with me. And I love that forum more so than any other forum, because our conversation can help everyone else who's witnessing it as well. So when we have a conversation with in social media, for me, that's just so beneficial, because if you have a question, I guarantee there's handfuls of people who are having that same question but would never ask it. So I love to be engaged there and to get people involved in there so we can have those conversations and really grow as a community. So facebook.com/ The Live Life Revolution, that's the best way to really just jump into what we're doing and get a hold of us there and be a part of what we've got going on.
Oh, wonderful. I'm planning to visit your page, Jim, and would love to be engaged in the conversations that you have. So, audience, again, what a great time you've had. I don't know where the hour has run away. So I would like to thank you, Jim, again, for joining us. Greatly appreciate it. And dear listeners, if you would like to contact me, please reach out to me at my email address, contact@deviaparekh.com. And until the next show in March, I take your leave and I wish you a happy Valentine's Day. Take care. Until then, bye-bye.